Everybody, get up. It's time to slam now. We got a real jam going now. Welcome to the Space Jam. Here's your chance to do your dance at the Space Jam. All right?
All right.
All right.
Good intro.
Thank you.
Of course. First of all, you know they still play this song at gyms. You know that, right?
Do they really?
Yeah. Our gym has it every now and then. It is a... This song, the Space Jam song, is good.
Yes.
By the Quad City DJs.
Is that who? I only know 2 Unlimited, but they're the ones who do the other song.
I'm pretty sure. So Quad City DJs did this song, and they're the ones who also did Everybody. Oh, wait, no, that's a...
That's Space Jam.
Are they the ones... Boom, 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 boom.
I want you in my room.
I'm pretty sure that's the same band. Actually, let me verify that, but I'm like 95% positive. Quad City DJs. But why are we talking about the Quad City DJs?
We're talking about these 90s bangers because we're talking about one of the epitomes of 90 kids movies, Space Jam. And why are we talking about Space Jam? Because they decided it would be a good idea to revive the Space Jam property this year with Space Jam, A New Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
The original Space Jam had the MLB. Oh, my God. This is how good I am with sports, guys.
NBA.
NBA legend Michael Jordan. And we now have a new NBA legend with LeBron James. So they figured might as well start A New Legacy. So yes. Let's just get right into it, right?
Wait, actually, before we get right into it, I will make a correction. It was not Boom, 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 I Want You in My Room. No, it is Come and Ride It, the train. Get on the train, choo-choo, and ride it. Come on the train, doo-doo, and ride. That's another song you hear regularly.
Come on the train,
choo-choo, ride it. These are two jams that you will hear regularly at gyms still.
Wow.
Because they hold up, and they are so good.
90s dance music is perfect exercise music.
Well, I'm going to talk about Space Jam music because I think I said the Rugrats might have been the first album I bought, but I actually think Space Jam predates it, and I think this was, without a doubt, the first album I got.
Mm-hmm.
And the music in the original one is so good.
Yeah, it really is. And so, just so many memories just came piling up when I rewatched this. So when we will talk about that. I am Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About
unoriginality. Gods at Warner Brothers have bestowed upon us a new release because,
yeah,
you know what? They are preventing me from having to go to theaters, and your boy here ain't complaining because that Delta variant is wreaking havoc on the U.S. So,
yeah, and you know, saving some money is always nice too, especially when
True. I mean, I already paid for HBO, so it's just like, oh, good, I get to watch
my money's worth. No, for sure. Yeah.
Do you know how much fun it was to host a movie night for In the Heights?
Yeah, that was cute. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, at the same time, too, let's just call this the Warner Brothers episode, too, because this is not the first time we're going to say Warner Brothers.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And
this
is way to put themselves at the forefront. We thought LeBron James was the star of this movie.
No,
it's Warner Brothers.
It is Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers trumps.
Yes.
LeBron James on this one.
Which is, well, if anyone's going to do it, I guess it's going to be the brothers.
Which is interesting because Disney would never. They would never be this self-referential.
Yeah, it's almost painfully obvious. But before we get into that, again, as always, we are joined by Eddie Z.
Hi, Eddie.
Hey, guys.
And I have a question for the both of you. Do you remember the year and where you were in 1996 and what you were watching?
Ooh, 1996 also was when 101 Dalmatians came out, right?
That's right. Very good. I think 1996 is a big movie year.
Yeah. I mean, Space Jam was my favorite movie of the year.
Yeah. I remember seeing it in the theater.
Uh-huh. And 101 Dalmatians was my sister's favorite movie of the year.
I remember seeing that in the theaters, too. I also remember seeing The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
I did see that one in theaters, too.
Yeah. Independence Day.
Oh, my God. No way.
And
oh.
Twister.
And Twister.
There was
and
some Twister. Crazy movies out, actually, in 96.
Yeah.
Twister, Independence Day. You had Erasers.
The Schwarzenegger movie.
Schwarzenegger movie.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And what was it? Escape from LA.
Okay. Crickets. I didn't see that one.
I act like I saw that too. I didn't see that one.
Mission Escape from New York, right?
Yeah, that's a good one.
That has the iconic poster.
I love John Carpenter, but yeah. No. Oh my gosh, did you guys ever go to the movie? Well, Rolando, maybe since you were Jersey. Did you ever go to the movie theater in Richfield?
Oh, actually, when I saw Space Jam still in the Bronx.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. This was so actually you're still in New York.
Yeah, so like I think Independence Day was the first movie I saw in New Jersey.
New Jersey, okay. Another movie that I remember seeing this year is The Nutty Professor. Very vivid memories in that theater, and one that is really obscure but a favorite of mine, The First Wives Club.
You saw that in the movies?
My mom took me to see it. My mom took me to see movies that she was into, right? First Wives Club. That's why I saw The Brady Bunch. That's why I saw Clueless. And yeah, so this is around the time where I was going to the theater a lot, and I was figuring out that I was a movie fan. So 1986 was like a big year for me, at least movie wise. Yeah,
they had some good hits here, especially if you're a 90s kid like we are. You know what I mean?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So
every decade says that about their movies, though. So.
Oh, of course, yeah. Everyone looks fondly on that. But I mean, I remember seeing not only Space Jam in the theaters. The way that I've overplayed that VHS is just like it's the real deal. Okay, that was one of my always like in rotation VHSs, and I loved it.
I had that one. I bought the VHS. Did yours come also with the special like little silver coin?
Oh, I don't recall that. Maybe
I remember that. I remember that because some dickhead on the carpool that we rode threw it and lost it.
Seriously?
No, I was heartbroken. Yeah, I was so angry. I think that's when I started learning not to trust people.
Lesson learned with Space Jam.
The day trust was lost.
Yeah. He's like, oh, that looks so cool. Let me see it. And then he fucking throws it. What a fucking dickhead. I think his name was James.
Fuck you, James.
Yeah, fuck you indeed.
We hope no children listen to this episode.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, guys.
But yeah, so it's interesting, too, right? Because when we think of Space Jam, what's like the first thing that you think about other than
Bugs
like,
Bunny?
Exactly. Right. Yeah. The reason that
Bugs Bunny got like second billing after Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny in Space Jam. And I think that was why at least it worked so well for kids was because of the Looney Tunes aspect to it. You know, like I think Looney Tunes was more prevalent for 90s kids than they are now. But again, I was a 90s kid, so I was aware and I watched the Looney Tunes. But they were like being played on Cartoon Network, you know, during the hours that I was awake and watching television, like 3 p.m. It was also, I think, not maybe on Nickelodeon. But like
no, Cartoon Network. It was
just Cartoon Network. So it was definitely in syndication and like available for me to see, right? Which
and I think at this time, this is about the time they started the WB, right?
Yeah,
Michigan J. Fox. Mm-hmm. So and that would spawn off, you know, Animaniacs, which we covered.
Yes, we did cover in another episode. So yeah, but it's interesting too because it's like when you think about what I think about Space Jam, I think about Looney Tunes. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't think that the Looney Tunes was a thing or like that kids are watching in 2021.
Good question, because I actually it's so interesting, right? When you just mentioned that, it's true. If you think of like 80s, 90s, like the common cartoons that I would say young people remember would be Looney Tunes or Looney Tunes related, being like Animaniacs or Tiny Toons. Disney cartoons like Mickey Mouse were like hard to come by.
They were, yeah.
And you know, as a result, like I feel like they were always a treat, despite the fact that they were just never as good as a Looney Tune.
No, yeah, because Looney Tunes was also like it was cooler.
Oh yeah, they were way cool. I mean, Daffy Duck, in hindsight, is like one of the best animated characters ever.
Daffy, you think?
I think Daffy is so good. I prefer it. As an adult, I prefer Daffy Duck over Bugs Bunny any day of the week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I think because he's cynical. He's basically like a black man. If you
Excuse me?
You don't think so? He's kind of coded. Daffy Duck. This is not me saying this. Like, I remember also reading about this, but Daffy Duck is coded as black.
How so again though? Like, tell me the.
I don't know. You know what? I'm gonna have to find my sources and link them there. So.
Yeah. That'd be. I would like to read this article.
It may or may not be in our show notes, guys, because maybe I'm misremembering things. But no. Oh no, they're making the argument that Bugs Bunny was black. Bugs Bunny was black. this article here says, there's no doubt in my mind Bugs Bunny was black. Oh, wait, here's the list. But not Daffy Duck. I feel like Daffy Duck was black.
I think Daffy is a character that is often, you know, he's like the butt of the joke. And he's not portrayed very well. He has a lot of negative qualities, shall we say, right? And usually the one who wins out in between the two is Bugs.
Yeah, he's usually short-tempered.
He's greedy. Yeah. He's selfish.
He
has a lisp, which also, like, if that's, like, making fun of a certain race is very rude.
All right. Well, then, but, you know what? Let's take this all back. How did we go?
The thing, though, but the Looney Tunes, they do have, like, caricatures of races, right? They have Speedy Gonzalez, you know, something that I think
Speedy
was
Gonzalez,
later
yes.
in the Mel Blanc, Chuck Jones eras, but he is Gus, you know, like, even Loghorn Loghorn Foghorn? Or Leghorn?
Foghorn Leghorn.
There we go.
He's not, I wouldn't call that a racist depiction. It's just
he's kind
of
like white trash.
Southern. No, he's a Southern. He's like a Southern. He's just Southern.
He's just Southern. Okay, well, Southern. I mean, like, that also
I see here.
Also that's a caricature. There's, I mean, Elmer Fudd, you know, of a certain type of man, shall we say.
What? Really?
Yeah, that's like a dim. Elmer Fudd is dim-witted. You know, he's not very bright, and he's into hunting. You know, he believes everything. You know, like, this
he
is
probably
a
voted for Trump, you know.
Oh. and of course, Pepe Le Pew, who was
canceled.
Yes, who was canceled because he's offensive to the French people.
Oh, so. No, he was.
All right. Well, he's a rapist.
Not a rapist, but he doesn't take no for an answer.
Well, this is a day and age where, you know, these things, they were just for comedic purposes. Nobody thought too much about it, but
right. I mean, I Pepe Le Pew jokes are good. I think, like, I think those episodes were funny. Like him constantly hunting down this poor cat who always had a white stripe on her.
Yes, yeah.
You know,
confusing
every
her for a skunk.
Came up with every scenario possible for her to get a white stripe on her to become a skunk.
Yeah, and I think it's also a good read of, you know, how stupid guys are and how they're just so vain and, you know, they're just like, they just look on looks alone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I don't cancel Pepe Le Pew. But let's get a little bit into some history, right? So let's go back to 1996. Actually, let's go back a little bit more than that. Back to 1992. Michael Jordan is, everybody knows his name, whether or not you watch basketball throughout the entire 90s. Like, you know, everybody knew who Michael Jordan was. You know, yes. Nike even created shoes for him called Air Jordans that are still popular to this day. These sneakers.
Yeah, they will sell out when new ones come out.
Yeah, that was my phone. They're that popular. Did you know that actually in 1992, to sell Air Jordans, they put Michael Jordan with Bugs Bunny in a string of commercials?
Did they need to do that?
It was just something that they did as like a marketing tool. They actually, you know, Nike went and really tried to convince Warner Brothers to let Michael Jordan be with Bugs Bunny because they wanted to appeal to children. And they were hesitant to, but then they gave in, and the commercials were so successful, right, that there was actually this, you know, spark of popularity of Bugs Bunny that Warner Brothers was like, oh, hey, you know, we can actually capitalize off of our properties of the Looney Tunes. My phone's going off. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
And that's when they came up with the idea for Space Jam. They were like, we got to put Bugs Bunny and Michael Jordan in a movie. The project was halted, though.
Obviously.
Who didn't think, like, oh, yeah, like, we'll make a movie.
Everyone was thinking this in the 90s. It's just like, well, you know who I want to see on the screen together? Bugs Bunny and Michael Jordan.
Again, you know, 4 years prior, they had a big hit with Who Framed Roger Rabbit? And people were, like, looking for ways to do that again.
Roger Rabbit only came out 4 years before Space Jam?
No. In terms of the historical timeline we're on right now. Remember, we're still in 1992.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say, she's like, that doesn't sound right. Okay, yeah.
So that's when they first greenlit the project. However, it got put on hold because in 1993, Michael Jordan retired from the NBA. And for 2 years, Michael Jordan did not play for the NBA.
He played minor league baseball.
Yep. But then he realized that was stupid and he had a comeback and he had a huge comeback. Mm-hmm. And immediately once he came back, they greenlit the project again and they wrote that into the script.
Right. And me as a child, I was a believer that like this is autobiographical. This all happened in real life. Like,
yeah, no, for sure. I thought that was his entire family.
so did I.
I bought that hook, line, and sinker. I was like 7 years old, you know, so. But, you know, so that's pretty much the premise of Space Jam. You know, Michael Jordan is at the height of his fame, but because of what baseball meant to his father, that's why he left it and went to do Major League Baseball.
Yep.
Meanwhile, in the Toon universe, there's like these alien toons that, you know, want to make the Looney Tunes their slaves, pretty much.
Danny DeVito is the owner of Moron Mountain, and he decides... It is Danny DeVito's the voice of it. But I don't know the name of the bad guy, like Mr. Slapstick or something. Something like that. Something silly. He's the owner of Moron Mountain.
Swackhammer,
okay. And, you know, sales are doing terrible, so he decides, oh, you know what we need is a big ticket attraction. So he sends his goons to steal the Looney Tunes, and the Looney Tunes say, let us defend ourselves through a game of basketball, because originally these little aliens are tiny and stuff. So the aliens decide, all right, fine, we'll take you on that deal. But then they steal the power from 5 NBA players, of which the only ones I remember, even though I just saw it, were Patrick Ewing and Charles Barkley. There's a white guy.
There's Sean Bradley, Larry Johnson, and Muggsy Bogues.
I don't know which one's the white guy, but there's a white guy.
I'm pretty sure that's Larry Johnson. No, wait, it's... Damn it, I got that wrong. It's Sean Bradley.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So...
There's a white guy.
There you go.
So, yeah, so that's... Yeah, that's the whole plot, essentially. And, of course, you know, if you're going to beat these crazy aliens, you're going to get Michael Jordan to do it.
Right. Yeah. So Bugs Bunny was just like, well, we need help. And he kidnaps Michael Jordan.
Yep. And it's so interesting because they live in the way that the Looney Tunes exists, right? They live right underneath our world and they can interact with our world. They live in a 2D dimensional, two dimensional world. We live in a 3D world.
Right.
Even though some say we live in a 4D, but I digress. So they live directly underneath us. Apparently. Mm-hmm. And that's important because this is going to change in the next world, the next iteration of Space Jam. But, and so apparently under some golf course somewhere, if you follow a gopher hole long enough, you'll see a WB sign that you can enter and you go into Looney Tune world. And that's the way that they describe it pretty much in Space Jam 1996.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, and then they could go from their world to ours, and we can go from our world to theirs. So,
yeah, right, because Wayne Knight's character makes it into Toon World, as does
Bill Murray. Yeah. So, you know, speaking of too, this film was actually a really hard film to pitch, not only to like studio executives for them to be like, hey, this is a good idea, we should make this movie, but for people to be in it. They wanted more of an all-star cast, and like literally the biggest name that they could get, which is still a big name, but the biggest name that they got for voices was Danny DeVito. They had to get Stan Knight to be the role of like the quote-unquote sidekick. Michael J. Fox didn't want that role. Chevy Chase didn't want that role. These are all the people that they wanted
for it. That's who they pitched. Those are two big names. Those are like way too big names.
Yeah.
Like you need, I think Wayne Knight was perfectly cast because he was a nobody.
Yeah.
And you also can't have some, because let's be very honest here. Michael Jordan is not a trained actor here.
No, he's not.
You know, so you cannot put someone who's going to steal focus. Wayne Knight, I think, was the perfect choice rewatching this movie.
He absolutely was. But at the end of the day, too, they had to kind of like, you know, they had to take him.
Yeah. So well, Bill Murray, because even Bill Murray, right? Like in the scenes where Bill Murray's in it, like he shines and he ends up stealing focus. Like even at the very end when he's just like, Bill Murray's convinced that he could have been a basketball player. And then you just hear his voice crack when he's cheering for the Bulls. You know what I mean? Like this is a great, you know, is it his greatest performance? No, but like, when it comes to the movie, like it's the better performance that we have in this film.
Yeah, for sure. And this was
outside of Danny DeVito. Yeah. And that's just voice, you know?
Yeah, this was also before Bill Murray had like a comeback of his own. You know, he wasn't really the star that he is now. He like now he's a legend, but back in the 90s and stuff, he was kind of old news. So this movie was really successful. You know, there was video games. Did you play the video game?
I don't think so, actually.
Yeah, I didn't either. I played the video game. I remember the comic books though, and they
I don't remember that.
Yeah, they were just like, you know, there was shirts, there were Happy Meals and figurines, there were Air Jordans.
The Happy Meals. Let me tell you about those Happy Meals. I do. I actually still have a handful of those little stuffed animals that you would get with the Happy Meal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're in my storage unit. But I had them all.
Wow.
I had them all. And they were like one of my prized possessions. I loved them so much.
That's great. I kind of remember. I think I might have had like the aliens and as part of my little people. I called all of my toys little people.
Yeah. No. I understand. But yeah, Lola Bunny and Bugs Bunny were my two favorite ones. I would always play with them.
There you go. Lola Bunny. Before we get to that, I just want to talk about the soundtrack. Did you have the soundtrack?
Oh, my God. All right. So I had the soundtrack. Hell yeah, I had the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. I Believe I Could Fly, who unfortunately is now canceled. Let's be real. That song is so good.
That song was like the song of the year, man. At least in my world.
As far as I remember, yes. Monica's song, which was For You I Will, was another one that was in that album.
Mm-hmm.
The Space Jam song.
The Seal song, Fly Like an Eagle.
Yes, that's right. Fly Like an Eagle. And the Hit 'em High, Hit 'em High, Hit 'em High,
yeah.
Hit 'em Low,
yeah.
Hit 'em Low. That's another good one.
And Get Ready for This by Two Unlimited.
Yes. Obviously another, that's another, it's one of banger. Those jock jams that you still hear.
Yeah, jock jam.
This was a fantastic soundtrack, and I'm pretty sure this one predates the Rugrats, so therefore this one actually might be the first album.
It does,
album.
Yeah. And this got replayed on my Walkman many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just good.
Yeah, it's a good soundtrack, yeah.
Good soundtrack, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because when I picked up my VHS and I rewatched it, I would always start it from when Michael Jordan entered the Toon verse, right? Because for me, the part that I enjoyed was the part with the Looney Tunes. That whole first part of the movie, that's all Michael Jordan and barely Looney Tunes. I could give,
which is actually like the
about.
First half hour.
Yeah, it really is a good portion of it.
It is. It's the first act.
Yeah, the movie is rather short, but a lot happens in it.
Which is so funny, right? I actually one of my favorite sequences is the actual. The Space Jam song and like the montage of Michael Jordan before he retires. I think that's one of my favorite things, and I will always watch it. Even when I was just rewatching it on Hulu, because that's where you could catch it now, guys.
And HBO Max.
It's on HBO Max too?
Yeah, that's where I
was. That was so funny. I should have looked there first, you would assume. Yeah. But it was just, I had seen it. Hulu was announcing it, I assume, because they knew that people would be looking for it because of the new one. I happened to know it was on Hulu, so I
there
just like
go,
checked
go.
It out there. But I just saw, you know, as I do, I watch these in reverse order as I do, but I've already seen Space Jam so many times that like, I know it by memory.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
Even rewatching it, I was just like, oh yeah, I remember all this. So,
yeah, so many memories.
But yeah, I still watched it right from the beginning. And that once, I remember feeling like a little kid when I was watching that like montage of Michael Jordan just dunking.
Yeah. And it's so 90s, but it's pretty well done.
I think so. Yeah, I agree.
And it was well done enough for them to echo that in the new one. But we're not getting to the new one yet, because we should talk a little bit about, you know, at least the portrayal of the Looney Tunes, right? You know, growing up watching Looney Tunes, and then even like being an adult and revisiting Looney Tunes, you know, you see when the Looney Tunes, they change and they have to evolve with the times and whatnot. But I always felt like these Looney Tunes, because obviously Chuck Jones was minimally involved. Mel Blanc did not voice these characters. Yet that still felt really true to the Looney Tunes that I at least felt like I grew up watching, the ones from like the 40s, 50s, and 60s. What did you think about the Looney Tunes? Did you think like as a 30-year-old, you know, adult now, did it work for you? Did you feel like, you know, like that was actually one of the most successful parts of the film? Because that's how I felt.
Yeah, rewatching it, actually, I would agree with you. I think the Looney Tunes aspect still works.
Yeah.
I don't remember if I was iffy on Bugs's voice back then. And I definitely was a little more iffy now re-listening.
Yeah. It's so hard to listen to someone other than Mel Blanc do Bugs Bunny. It really is. So
even now, I was just like, even rewatching it now, I'm just like, huh, did it sound like this? Or everyone else, I think everyone else is pretty good. Like maybe with the exception of Daffy Duck also is another one whose kind of voice you can tell.
Yeah, it's not the same.
With, but you know, I could forgive all that. Themselves.
You know.
There were a lot of Looney Tunes here. Do they all get to shine? No, right? And there were, I think at a certain point, like, Eddie was just like, I don't even know who half of these Looney Tunes are. And it's true. Like, some of the references, some of the Looney Tunes that are actually featured in the actual movie, in some of the scenes, like, are, like, deep cuts. Like, for example, there was that little mouse. I don't remember that little mouse, for example. The one who was, like, all talking. It's like, hey, guys, oh, my God, I'm so glad I'm here playing. Yeah, and then he gets squished by the basketball. I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
The vulture, I vaguely remember, you know.
The big hairy one from the Barber of Seville. One, did you guys know him? The big red hairy
monster. I
don't know.
He has, like, he's bald.
I think so. But I just, like, all hair. And he's large.
No. It's a vulture. It's like a bird.
I'm talking about someone completely different.
You're thinking of, like, the red hair guy.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, do you know who that is?
Oh, yeah, I know who that is. Was he in this one? I don't remember him in Space Jam.
I think he was. Wasn't he the Wicked Witch in this one?
He was definitely the new one.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm confusing the two, the two then. The Wicked Witch was in the first one or the second one?
First one.
Okay.
Wicked Witch makes her appearance here.
Yeah, you're right. They don't all shine. But it's hard because at the end of the day, most of them are supposed to be wallpaper, right? The main characters are Bugs, Daffy, because Daffy is the yin to his yang. You know, Porky Pig is going to get a couple of lines, of course. So is Elmer Fudd. So is Sylvester and Tweety. Everyone loves Tweety.
Everyone loves Tweety.
And this new character, Lola Bunny. Yeah, I've never cared for a Tweety.
I just discovered is non-binary.
How so?
Tweety Bird is non-binary. So Tweety Bird.
Oh, I thought you said Lola Bunny. That's.
Oh, no. Lola Bunny is female, and that was a controversy.
But Tweety Bird is you. That's a good read.
Tweety Bird is non-binary because presents sometimes as female, and even in like the marketing, it's usually like pink. She's wearing different clothes, like girly clothes. Mm-hmm. But it is Tweety Bird is male. Is supposed to be male, right? So this is why I say he's non-binary, because it's just like they present whatever they want to present with Tweety Bird.
That's so interesting. Because, you know, Tweety and Sylvester is just like another version of like the Tom and Jerry thing, which we covered recently.
Which we did cover, yes.
And
part of the same universe.
Yes. And I guess if I were to compare, you know, Tweety and Sylvester to Tom and Jerry, I would probably pick Tweety and Sylvester.
Oh, no, yeah, because at least Sylvester can talk.
At least Sylvester can talk, and I actually relate to him.
And they also gave us the Tweety, Sylvester, and Grandma Mystery Hour.
Yes,
WB, which was a show I used to watch.
Wait, actually, I might prefer Roadrunner and Coyote, though.
Oh, that's a good dynamic, too,
That's
though.
A great dynamic. And they don't talk. Neither of them talk.
They don't talk. But that you
it's
don't
purely
need,
visual.
Like, but their visuals are so much better, though, because you're in the desert and, like...
Yeah, that's
than
true.
Than Tom and Jerry.
Mm-hmm. And it's, and sometimes feel much more visual exotic. Comedy is way better. But, you know, it's interesting because there's this part in the film where Bugs is telling Michael Jordan. He just brought him back to the Toonverse, and he's like, all right, so here's the story, right? And he tells you the plot. But while he's doing it, he acts it out, right? So, like, you know, like, when he's like, oh, they want us to be slaves and we'll perform. And then, like, you see, like, Bugs is there with, like, chains on his legs performing. And, like, the whole thing is, like, drawn out, you know? That's one of the things that I think that this film actually does really well is that they really utilize the loony aspect of the Looney Tunes. And even in terms of telling the story, right? They're not just, like, simply telling you the story. It's so visual, right? Everything Bugs says, there's, like, a visual accommodation with it. And that happens
like a
lot throughout this
something.
Film. Yeah.
And that's part of the payoff at the end, right? That's how they win the game, like being
loony
almost.
And having all those things. And it was just one of, I think, the things that worked so well for me as a kid watching it. And even now, it like you're so like, to me at least, visually, you know, struck by all these things that I think just work so well in terms of telling the story and moving it forward, but also keeping me entertained and making like, wow, this is really good, you know, visual comedy.
Right.
So what do we think about Lola Bunny?
I liked Lola Bunny when I saw her.
I mean, you know, so it's interesting because obviously she's a love interest.
She's a anamorphic bunny.
Yes.
Who's female, obviously. Who's she going to end up with? Bugs Bunny.
Of course,
And, who's she going to end Daffy Duck?
Yeah, exactly. but at the end, so it's interesting too because... As a one of the only female characters, technically, who's like clearly female, other than like Granny.
Other than Granny.
They had to, even though she doesn't want to be categorized by her sexuality, right? Don't call me doll. They sexualize the shit out of her. She's the Jessica Rabbit of this movie.
But she's not. Jessica Rabbit was a straight up, having a figure. So what? Right? Like, are you saying that Megan Thee Stallion can have a figure and be a rapress?
Where is the sexualization of any of the other characters in their bodies, right? Bugs, we don't, there's no, if you just look at Bugs Bunny, there's no identification that that's a boy character. If you look at Daffy Duck, there's no identification that that's a boy character also.
Right. This is true. So are you saying that they should have just had Lola Bunny be naked like everybody else?
Why not?
I mean, I guess Tweety Bird is naked and Tweety Bird is non-binary. So.
Yeah. The moment you put clothes on her, right? The moment I have a visual before the character even speaks so that I know that she's a girl, right? The way that she has hair and like the hair is a very particular way, you know, like it's a very girly haircut. The way that she's even shaped slightly, you know, she has more around her boobs and her ass than any of the other characters do. That's sexualizing her.
Except for Granny, because Granny is stacked.
Granny is stacked.
Right. Swing low, sweet chariot, you know?
Yeah. So, like, when you look at the Pepe Le Pew and that the character that was a girl that he was in love with that was a cat, you know, that worked because she looked like a cat, but it was a girl cat, you know?
No, she had, like, boobage.
Did she?
Yeah, she had, like, curves. It was, yeah, she had curves.
Very slight, though. It wasn't over.
Because she still had the figure of a cat, though. She was on all four legs.
Yeah.
Lola Bunny is a bipedal.
Yes, she is. It's interesting because the character herself, you know, she wants to be taken seriously for her athletic prowess and she wants to be just another teammate, but you know, it's just, of course, they have to portray her as that in order for us to get to the point where it's like, oh no, we shouldn't look at her like that. We should look at her as just like everybody else. Even though they present her in that way. It's just a very interesting... It's so clear, too, that the writers are guys, is all I have to say.
Oh, yeah, which actually reminds me. I want to get on a tangent here. It is not related to this one, but it is related to the idea what we just talked about, right? So me and Eddie were just watching American Horror Stories.
Okay.
And this first two episodes are about a 16-year-old lesbian who is into BDSM. She is fantasizing and stuff, and they're really going out of their way to really hypersexualize this 16-year-old to a point that I got very uncomfortable in certain scenes, right? So after there was literally like basically her fantasizing and masturbating, the next scene is like her with girls and stuff, and they're like, so why aren't you out yet? And she's just like, oh, I don't want people to fetishize my sexuality. Literally that phrase came in a scene like that, it follows like sexualizing the shit out of the 16-year-old. So it's just like one of those instances where, yeah, written by men, obviously, and just like they're fucking so.
Yeah.
Wow. Way to make a statement here. Way to fucking get lose it immediately.
Yeah. Seriously. You know? Exactly. Exactly.
So, all right. Fine. I will agree with you on Lola Bunny. But
yeah, there you go. You just proved my point right.
But I don't know. I think, isn't there something fun though? Also, though, like, why can't she be girly and also be athletic? Are you telling me that Venus and Serena Williams are...
You're talking about real-life people, right? Who were not drawn that way. These are human beings, and those are their bodies. This is a character that was drawn, presumably, by a man.
Probably, most likely.
And written, at least, by men. You know, let's look at the screenplay. Let's just... Yeah. Written by Leo, Benvenuti, Steve, Timothy, and Herschel. Four guys.
Herschel. Okay.
Yeah. So four men are the ones who came up with Lola Bunny.
You know what I said before in the past, right? When a movie has four writers, it's never a good sign.
Yeah, no, I'm sure this one from different writer to different writer.
Yeah, like, although, you know what? Exception to the rule, because I think this movie is just fine.
I mean, yeah, it's a perfectly fine film, but you know,
this movie, no, let's be very honest. This movie is, even in retrospect, this movie is just fine at best.
Yeah. Yeah,
like this movie is it's enjoyable because I was a kid when I was watching it, but like, would I categorize this as a good movie? Absolutely not. It's a fun movie, and I think I enjoy watching Michael Jordan interact with the Toons. But that's is this Roger Rabbit? Absolutely not. Roger Rabbit was fucking great, and it is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, I do love Roger Rabbit. I guess my only counter argument to your point, you know, like, oh, why can't women be girly girl and athletic? Nobody's saying that. I'm saying that this character who is presented as one of the only female characters, right, in this movie, is identified not only by the fact that, yeah, she's a girl, but like by her body, right? It's a visual marker for this character. So like before before she even does anything, right, we see her. The music plays, you know, it's all about her body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it sets us up for like, oh wow, who's this like hot girl that like, oh, Bugs is like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go smooth talk her or whatever. You know, immediately she's sexualized the moment she comes on screen.
And she shuts it down each time.
Which is great too, but you know, it's like that's also what women dynamics are when they're introduced to boy films like this.
Lola Bunny is just teaching girls that it's okay to be hot, and you know what? It is also okay to be into sports.
And I have like I agree with that. It's just okay. You're just
No. I'm playing devil's advocate here. I understand your point and I see it's you are hurt. I don't disagree with you. I think even rewatching it, like, you're right. There are those cues. Like, the music changes. I think you only see her silhouette, like, immediately first, right? And it's that hourglass figure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as, you know, a little girl who grows up and watches these films, and it's like, oh, here's all of these characters who look normal until they're women, and then they look like Jessica Rabbit and Lola Bunny. It's like, oh, so, you know, as a woman, like, I am identified by like, being a girly girl with a full voluptuous figure.
I feel like
stuff.
Jessica Rabbit, though, is a very, very big difference because Jessica Rabbit
is drawn that way.
But she's also human.
And, I also feel, okay.
And like her proportions are so like absurd. It's just like that is unrealistic. Lola Bunny, I don't think girls are looking up to her and saying it's like, I can't wait to look like Lola Bunny. She's a rabbit.
Well, I would hope nobody wants to grow up and look like Jessica Rabbit. She's a cartoon.
I don't know. I feel like if if social media was a thing back then, there'd be a lot of girls like getting the lip fillers,
maybe.
Like, putting the hair in the red, you know?
Yeah, well, a lot of girls look up to Harley Quinn too. So, you know, sometimes we'll take where we can get our women roles.
Hey, God, hang on. I'm going to defend Harley Quinn a little bit here. When she originally came out, she was not sexualized. It was... as more and more male writers in DC, they started hypersexualizing her, and it took a lot of power, at least in the comics, for them to like kind of tone that back and like kind of desexualize her a little again. So she's gone through iterations, but when she originally came out, she was not like this sexy vixen. She was actually like this very fun, whimsical almost kind of character. It wasn't about the curves. Yeah, she wore a one-piece suit, but like it was like a funny one-piece suit, right? It was a Harlequin outfit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not.
She's
here
a queer
to
character,
talk about Harlequin,
and she is queer. Yeah,
queer
yeah.
character.
Yeah,
and I think the only thing different, just add about Harley Quinn, you know, we're not talking about anything having to do with Harley Quinn.
She's part of the DC.
Is that she uses her sexuality to distract her enemies, to get the upper hand. So she knows what card she's playing, to distract, to get the upper hand.
Hey, these are all qualities that are on a deeper level too, that someone who doesn't read, you know, comic books, I wouldn't know. You know, I just know that, you know, she has a really toxic relationship with the Joker, and she sticks around
which
even though she
treats
her like shit.
It's
which is always addressed.
It is always, yes, there is always. The truth is, yes, it is a toxic relationship, but like, I think there's all more and more DC has gone out of their way to try to rectify that, at least in the comics. Less so, maybe in the movies a little bit, but Harley Quinn is a very, very complicated character. I'm a fan of Harley Quinn. She has like a rich history, and it's a very, very contemporary history. Like, she came out because of the animated TV show. That's like
right. I remember. It's such a good animated TV show, man.
Yeah.
That Batman
and that's
one.
That's where she originated from.
Yeah.
But
all right, so back to Space
unrelated.
Jam. Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting though, because I think in the new one, I think I caught a glimpse of her.
You might have, actually.
Yes. I might have, yeah.
No, you have.
She there?
Yes.
She was there.
Oh, was she? Okay.
Yeah.
I did see her.
So, Rolando, can you tell us what the new Space Jam is all about?
The new Space Jam is about fatherhood, plain and simple.
Ah, there you go.
That's how I will whittle it down. So, in the original Space Jam, where it was the Looney Tunes who were in the predicament and they needed the help of a basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
In Space Jam, A New Legacy, we find ourselves with a father who has a disconnection with his son. and he is trying to. I'm going to try to keep things a little vague. As, oh, can we spoil it? We'll spoil it. Let's spoil it.
You know, right now we're going to spoil it. So,
all right. So Warner Brothers has created this thing called algorithm, guys. And the algorithm is offended that when they pitch
the algorithm is actually has become humanized. Nobody's realized that it's become humanized.
Yeah, it's like a
HAL 9000,
played by Don Cheadle.
Yes.
And they're pitching this idea to LeBron James to kind of, I don't know what the idea was.
It's basically to buy his image.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And utilize his image and just scan him and upload him to movies.
Yep.
Right. Which is, let's be real, Disney is doing this. I remember, yes, thank you, that's exactly true. Disney basically did this with Star Wars several times, you know, with Princess Leia and so I don't know if this was a dig at Disney. It might be. We know that they have a deep-rooted rivalry, Warner Brothers and Disney, but anyway, yeah, so algorithm wants to use King James's image. King James was like, this idea is a fucking ludicrous and stupid, I want no part of it. Algorithm goes crazy and decides to kidnap him and his son, who has kind of, him and his son have kind of not been butting heads, but you know, LeBron James is all about basketball and basketball's life, and like, you know, when you're on the court, it's the court that matters, and his son wants to just build video games like a nerd. And so LeBron James is not about that life, and so they're having a very, very big disconnect as a result. Algorithm decides to really, drive that wedge between them, and challenges LeBron James to a basketball game. LeBron James has to, like, set up his team in order to succeed, and so he throws him into Toon World, where only Bugs Bunny resides at the moment. Right,
because
Algorithm has access to all these universes that Warner Brothers owns, including, but not limited to Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, The Matrix,
DC,
even
Casablanca is its own world, apparently.
Well, yeah, because it's Turner Classic.
Yeah, and it's there's Oz,
and Oz, yeah. So basically, it's LeBron James going through all these universes to try to get his team together. He wants like these A-list teams, like Superman, King Kong, Iron Giant. Bugs Bunny, on the other hand, wants to get his friends together, and because they've all separated, and and then there's a basketball game, guys.
Yeah, a big part of the movie is actually just the basketball game. It's like a two-hour movie.
It is a two-hour movie. The movie is long, but there is a basketball game, and the basketball game starts off father versus son, because Algorithm has convinced LeBron James' son to, you know, use the video game that he had created as the court game. And Algorithm also sucks in humans for some reason into the game. There was a lot. So as I'm saying it in retrospect, the movie plot line is a little more complicated than I realized when I was watching it. But when I was watching, I was just letting go. I was just like, all right, I'm just going to. This movie's not going to make much sense. I'm going to just try to enjoy
it. Yeah, I just got
to
go with it. Yeah. Yeah. Just got any reason for him to interact with Harry Potter characters and DC characters. You know, that's pretty much the reason.
Yeah, that's all we're watching. Basically, we're just watching a giant commercial
for Warner Brothers.
For Warner Brothers, HBO Max, basically.
Yeah. You know, even Game of Thrones is in there. So it really felt like Warner Brothers, you know, brainwashing us and just like implanting it into our memories, you know, like, hey, Warner Brothers.
Well, they're trying
awesome.
To catch up here because Disney owns so much IP too, and we're like very familiar with Disney IP.
Yeah,
and I actually said earlier in the show that like, oh, Disney would never be so brazen to do this, but they kind of did with Wreck-It Ralph number 2. So
true. Yeah. Well, Warner Brothers also dicked themselves over by letting so many of their properties be sold to other theme parks and stuff. Because when you think of like Harry Potter, you think of Universal, and you think of all like the other rides, and then it's like, you know, the big games. The big players in the game are Disney and Universal, right? And Universal doesn't own Harry Potter. Universal doesn't own DC or any of these things. And yet, you know, they're profiting off of it.
Yeah, but keep in mind, Harry Potter might have the movies. They might have the Harry Potter movies, but Harry Potter is a book series. I think whoever owns the book, the books is the actual owner of the IP, which might be J.K. Rowling herself.
It could be, yeah. But also,
she can license it to whoever she wants.
I mean, that world that they built, though, was because of the movies, not because of the books. I mean,
oh no, absolutely. Yeah. I don't disagree with you, but I'm just saying, it's just like,
There's all the this legal park. Jargon. There,
yeah, this is, so. I mean, when you go into media creation, right? Yeah. It turns into a mess.
Basically. It really does. The business side of it, at least.
Right.
But so the interesting part, too, is that, you know, they bring in all these Warner Brothers characters to watch the game, you know, which is why I was like, oh, I saw King Kong there. I saw the Iron Giant there. I saw the Joker there. I saw Harley Quinn there. I saw the Wicked Witch there. I saw Dorothy there, you know, like.
I saw the nun from the Conjuring series.
That's there. Who that, I saw the nun. She yes. was there in that one scene. I was like, what nun is that?
It's like, why is there a nun?
Yeah.
It is because she's from the Conjuring universe, which is a Warner Brothers universe.
Yeah, so half of the time, too, you're like, if you don't give a shit about the story, you can at least have fun trying to see how many characters you know in the audience.
My favorite one was the Arnold Schwarzenegger Mr. Freeze. That was
yes,
a good
Mr.
one.
Freeze was there.
Like,
yeah.
Mr. Freeze, in his robe, in the blue makeup. I was just like, wow, that is like a deep cut to go into. I'm okay, respect Warner Brothers.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, some of these are deep cuts for sure. There's a bunch of Matrix people. And what did you think about that whole sequence where all of the Looney Tunes were hidden in these other worlds and they had to go grab them?
I actually liked it.
You enjoyed that?
I did. I know it was like, a commercial. I understand this.
The whole movie's a commercial.
I'm not blind to this, but like, I think my favorite one might have been Foghorn Leghorn riding the dragon.
That was cute.
I said winter is coming, and it just worked. Besides the fact that like Daenerys never said that, but I thought it was funny. Granny and Speedy Gonzalez in the Matrix also I thought worked to great effect. Daffy Duck trying to be Superman. I don't know. That sequence I actually enjoyed very much.
That was a fun sequence. Yeah, you know. So at the end of the day, I'm like, wow, this is some like real like heavy marketing. You know, trying to brainwash the children for Warner Brothers, but like, hey, it's working. I'm having fun.
It definitely worked. If I was a child watching this, I'd be like, oh man, Warner Brothers is so cool.
Yeah, this is the cool part of the movie. Once they start playing basketball, boring.
Oh, that's...
Oh, wow.
Wow, yeah.
Totally against that.
Disagree here.
I don't like basketball.
This was not basketball. This was watching. Basketball.
Yeah, this is more similar, actually, to the original Space Jam 2, where... You know, it's not just basketball. It's like the Looney Tunes actually being Looney Tunes, which is why they win the game. One of my favorite things about the original, too, was the lesson that they had to learn where they're like, oh, man, we're going to lose this game. And they're like, here, drink this. This will make you powerful. But it was just water, you know. And like the whole thing was that they had to like figure they had it within themselves. Right. There was Eddie no special juice.
Eddie had an interesting read on that scene. Eddie, do you want to divulge?
Yeah, I was really watching it like a parent. Like through a parent's eye. And I was like, wait a minute, is this like juicing? It's like taking steroids in the locker. You know, is this performance drugs? You know, because there is a kind of comment that is made about it. You know, oh, this is, you know, Daffy Duck, I don't think this is legal. I would never do this. And then, you know, and then it's, you know, Bugs Bunny getting like super buff, or he morphs into a super buff guy after he drinks this. I'm just thinking about, you know, what message is that? And don't even get me started on the gun use on the basketball court.
Lots of gun news.
I did not understand. I was like, I'm not feeling this at all. I'm just like, this is ridiculous.
Elmer Fudd and Yosemite Sam have guns.
They both have guns, and they're just shooting up this basketball's mouth. The
monster's mouth.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking, how necessary is this? And why would they ever be need, like, you know, why... Why even have this?
Which is a good point, because it's this? Like, we cancel Pepe Le Pew, but we're not canceling Elmer Fudd or Yosemite Sam and their indiscriminate love of guns.
You know, so it's interesting, too, because The Simpsons made a really interesting episode about, like, violence in cartoons, you know, like Itchy and Scratchy, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And how their excessive use of violence. And there's this great first season episode where Marge is like unhappy that her child is watching these two characters be terrible to each other. And she successfully gets Itchy and Scratchy to change this.
Yeah.
And then, but then the episode continues where because Marge Simpson was so successful in changing, you know, the dynamics of Itchy and Scratchy, that all these other people who were unhappy that a famous artwork that has a naked body in it was going to come to Springfield, and they wanted Marge to, you know, champion them, saying, we don't want nude work coming here.
Michelangelo.
And, yeah. It was like a Michelangelo, or it was like the Venus de Milo or something like that. And she was like, oh no, that's art. I don't want to censor that. And the Simpsons argument for that was like, well, why did you, but you can't just censor one art. and then not be happy when you censor another art. So do we think that this is a censorship thing, right? Where it's like, it's cartoons, it's gun violence, or do we actually feel like, no, this kind of use in a cartoon actually does send a message that we don't want our children or anybody to like really have to swallow? You know, what are our thoughts on that argument?
Well, I would never, I mean, I know I said it's just like, why, I know I just made that joke, like, why are Elmer Fudd and Yosemite Sam not canceled? But I wouldn't, I don't know. I mean, that's the problem, right? Like, I think parents also have to have that discussion with kids, and it's just like, okay, well, this is a cartoon. You can't do that in real life.
Yeah.
I don't know. To Eddie's defense, though, I don't... They're still shooting up and you're still seeing it.
Of course.
Right? Even in the cartoon world, it's still like kind of, is this really appropriate? I don't know.
These cartoons treat violence like it's nothing, you know? And one thing, they're like getting bombarded, you know, whether it's with guns or some other form of violence. And then the next thing, they're fine, you know? Yeah. So, of course, that does send off a really bad message.
I don't know. What do you think, Eddie?
Yeah, because I'm just like a first one that just tries to be like sensitive to that, in the sense of like art and how we interpret art and what is art and what is just like just fun and just like, hey, you know, this is just like, it's a cartoon. It's, you know, just drawings and stuff like that. But then it's like what I think about, like when it's kind of put in when you insert it in certain elements. And it makes you kind of think. So like being on the basketball court, right? And having that as part of like, this is how we're going to win this game. This is part of our strategy, right? And then you have that scene in the locker room. It's like, oh, this is how we're going to win. This is what we believe in. We don't believe in ourselves. We believe in this magic juice thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was Jordan's juice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, you know, when I think of that, it makes me think of this. It makes me think of like what we need to do to we'll do what needs to be done to win.
Cheat.
Yeah.
Basically. No, but which is interesting, right? So yeah, and that's like a big message in the original one, but it's also important in the new one, because LeBron James in this movie, this movie is very much LeBron James telling the Looney Tunes, do not be yourselves, be basketball players, constantly throughout the movie. That's one of the aspects of this movie that I liked, right? The new one, which was LeBron James was in a way kind of made the antagonist also, though. Because if you're a little kid watching this from the point of view of the little kid, you're going to be rooting for the kid who wants to be the video game maker. No.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
I think so. And I think LeBron James was kind of a dick.
No.
He was a stickler.
You can't say that.
Okay.
No, you can't, because he's being a dad.
Okay.
And you see the process. You're already given an insight that he, at a young age, he was said, you have a talent. Let's not get distracted. And of course, what was distraction? Video games. Okay, the talent. Yeah. And so it's already instilled in him, I'm gonna work hard, I'm not gonna let anything distract me, you know, to achieve. And then he's trying to instill these same ideals to his kids, but the time has changed, circumstances change, and also I'm not a parent yet, I hope to be one day, but it's this idea of like, you know, it's that moment when you see your kids are as like their own individual person with their own hopes and dreams and how they see. And it's like, you know, it's like my little man. He's like, he's growing up and he's being his own person. And I have to respect that. And that's a process.
Which is.
And we see that in the movie, which I love, which I see this in the movie. And all this time too, we see his son being, because his son has no idea what's really at stake here.
Mm-hmm.
He was seduced by the algorithm, and now he's seeing like, wait a minute, all the cruelty and violence and all the sense of like, this isn't fun. And then he's like looking at his dad for like, you know, for some guidance. And he makes that choice. I'm going to be on my dad's side.
Yeah. No, yeah, I mean, all right. Which actually brings up a good point. This is one of the things I actually liked about this movie.
Uh-huh.
I think this had a much deeper story than the original Space Jam in a way that I was just not expecting. Like, I think the depth of the kind of the story that they were trying to, like, tell here was a lot deeper than I was expecting for Space Jam, which I appreciated. Was it the most successful telling of the story? Not necessarily. But I think, considering the medium that this was, I think it was handled well. And I was reading some of the reviews for this movie. A lot of critics say hated the movie. I'm just like, I don't know. Were we watching the same movie? Because I thought this movie was just enjoyable.
Well, it's also just like freaking Space Jam. Like, what do you expect? You know, so...
I mean, it's Space Jam. Yeah, right.
Well, so, okay. So I do like that both films have a message, right? Like, in the original film, at least when I was younger, I was like 7 years old. So I never read steroids into that. I read, like, you have to believe in yourself. You know, as long as you believe in yourself, you could do anything. You can win the basketball game, you know, even though you're not Michael Jordan and you've lost or whatever. This one is that you have to let people be themselves. You know, you have to let, like, people have their own paths that they need to walk, and we need to champion that, you know, like, there's no set way for anyone to go about it or anything or whatever. And that, you know, yeah, like, just let people be their own successful thing. Which is something that was more so just for the humans instead of the Looney Tunes, I feel like. The Looney Tunes, they didn't have so much. They kind of, in this movie, I felt like were more so just there to support LeBron. And, like, maybe Bugs, you know, had a plan to unify, you know, everybody because they got separated. And then he, to the point where, spoiler alert, he gives his life for it for at least, you know, 10 minutes. So, you know, and it's also this whole theme of family, you know, and, like, you're found, whether it's your blood family or it's your found family too, you know, like, hey, like, through whatever it is, you know, and we have all these things, but at the end of the day, we're family. So there always is some sort of, you know, message to be had, you know, whether or not it's the most successful or it's the clearest message, you know, like, I don't feel like we had to dig for these messages. I think they're pretty clear.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, you know? they're there. Front and center.
But, you know, I mean, they're not like tear jerkers or anything, but it's good to at least have, you know, instead of it just being a bunch of comedy skits one after another.
Well, that's the thing. So I actually thought the original Space Jam, while it was fine, I think for the most part, like, if I had to whittle it down, it's just like the story is that Michael Jordan decides to leave basketball because leave baseball and go back to basketball because that's what he's always, that's just what he just naturally gravitates toward. Yeah. Where this one, I just felt like it's just like, this is a story about a man, like Eddie said, it's just a man coming to terms with, like, the individualism in his son. And also at the same time, like, a son kind of, well, this is less about the son. This is really more about, like, LeBron James, like, letting his son have his own identity and stuff. Yeah. And I thought that was actually, I think in a way, like, that was a story that I wasn't expecting for a Space Jam movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I was just like, by the end of it, I was just like, huh, this was shockingly, like, very, very sweet.
Yeah,
this was a very sweet story.
When you take away the whole bizarre plot line of the algae rhythm. And that whole technical aspect, then yeah, it's a really sweet story.
You know, you need a villain. You need a villain. You need a device to connect all these universes. You know, at the end of the day, you're making a commercial for Warner Brothers.
That was what they did. Yeah, it is a commercial for Warner Brothers. So.
And, you know, this is how we had to just take this story. But, I thought the movie ended up being a lot more fun than I was expecting. I think LeBron James, while no Michael Jordan. In this one, though, they did the smart thing of, like, kind of only keeping him in the he's really on screen for, like, the second half of the movie, right? Like, prior to that, he's kind of just animated, so it's just voice work. And it's all relying on the graphical components of, like, the Looney Tunes themselves. Which, smart if he can't give you the performance that Michael Jordan did. Because Michael Jordan, I sometimes did seem committed to, like, the role.
That's so interesting. I actually think LeBron's a better actor.
Really? No, I thought Michael Jordan's had, I don't know, maybe Michael, so LeBron's had much more to work with, right? And I'm not by any means saying that LeBron is a bad actor. I just think because the simplicity of the original Space Jam was able to work better with the talents that Michael Jordan had. Okay. Whereas this one had like more depth and stuff where I don't know if LeBron James could, like, do that. Again, I'm not digging on LeBron James. I'm just saying it's just like, there were times where it's just like, he's not very good on screen. I thought so.
I guess, yeah, for me, because LeBron had more to work with in terms of actual story and character and motivation. You're right. And he did have a lot. Mm-hmm. I actually think he did it pretty successfully.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm saying in comparison.
And he had more real people to work off of. He had his wife. Mm-hmm. He had his other kids. He had his cousin.
And he had Don Cheadle.
Yeah, you know, and so back it was, you know, more to kind of to work off.
Yeah, and I think I'm thinking about his acting more in those ways instead of his like, what, huh? You know, like his reacting to the things that he clearly can't see while he's shooting.
But all right, you know what? Fair. I think you guys are right. Maybe I was being hard on LeBron James. You know what, though?
That's hard. I mean, the guy who did it in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Bob Hoskins, he's like one of the best who ever freaking did that. Because that's hard to react to things that you can't see.
Yeah, it's true.
So let's like give them slack.
Fine. I can do that. But I will say this. I think... I wonder if LeBron James is he beloved or is he not?
Well, you know, you got somebody who calls himself King James is gonna have a big amount of people who hate him. Yeah. Uh-huh. So I don't know. I don't follow basketball.
I know he's like I know he is a legend.
Yeah, right? Everybody knows who he is. You know?
I know that he's the one that like is compared oftentimes with Michael Jordan.
Yeah. I think he's actually been more successful in at least in terms of championships and stuff.
You might be right about I don't know. I'm gay, so
doesn't matter. Doesn't mean anything. Okay?
Yeah, when he was given the card, it said don't watch basketball ever. You're gay now.
Just don't watch sports in general, right? But I think I was just wondering because like I happen to know Steph Curry. And I know that he's like kind of like a lot of people. He seems like a genuinely good guy. But I was wondering, it's just like maybe he doesn't have enough titles under his belt to make the story plausible. But I feel like Warner Brothers should just waited like maybe 5 more years and had Steph Curry instead of LeBron James.
I think LeBron James was the only logical choice for this, honestly.
For now.
But I don't know. LeBron has been pretty legendary for a long time, for like 10 freaking years. Yes. Like, we're going to wait 5 years for someone to maybe become a legend when we have someone who's been a legend this for 10 years. All right.
You know what? Yeah, I'm just nitpicking now. I
think so. Film. Maybe, are you a hater of LeBron James?
I'm not. I actually don't know enough about LeBron James to hate. So I hate his
acting.
I didn't think his acting was as good as Michael Jordan's, but I think he did not make me, I think, as you said, I think he was good enough for this role, considering he had a lot more to work with than Michael Jordan.
Okay.
What did you think of the animation? The 2D animation? Yeah, the 2D animation and the 3D animation.
The animation I thought was fine. And I thought, it was all really impressive, especially on the basketball court and that whole aspect. I was like, oh my God, these editors and these visual effect makers, like, wow, how many people are on this team, you know? But overall, the actual portrayal of the Looney Tunes, that's how I feel about it, honestly.
Really?
You know what I mean?
I liked the Looney Tunes on this one.
There was only one part of this movie that made me laugh, okay?
Oh, really?
Okay, one, go. When Michael Jordan came to visit them.
That was a good joke. I agree
that
with you.
That was a good joke.
That was a good, like, Michael Jordan is here, and everyone's, like, ready for this arrival, and it turns out to be Michael B. Jordan.
Yes, that was funny. Because you felt it. You felt there was going to be some sort of gag, but you didn't know what it was. And then when it delivered,
I know. I called it like from the get-go. I was like, there's no way.
All right, whatever. You called
it. Must be Michael. I did call it, but I still thought it was done to great effect.
I thought that was a funny joke.
But
none of the Looney Tunes-ish things made me laugh. I also felt like it was trying too hard to be relevant. Whereas, like, I thought that in the 90s Space Jam, it was more so just loonies. Like, it was, they were being Looney Tunes. Yeah, they had their Pulp Fiction jokes and whatnot, but like they were also just being their characters, where I felt like these characters were trying to be a little bit more relevant, especially Granny in terms of an overly PC culture.
What was wrong? What do you mean with Granny? What were we
they like
Granny?
Upped her character, you know, to be like what Lola was kind of like for the original, where it's like, hey, don't judge a book by its cover and all this stuff.
Oh, speaking of, you know which character got a lot more voice time but no camera time? Speedy Gonzalez. Like, you would hear him a lot, but, like, you would never see him. And it's just why are we not, just show me, like, I understand, like, he was a racist betrayal, but are you trying to fix it or not? Like, I don't understand.
This is true.
What, what are you trying to do here? Like, either show me a scene where Speedy Gonzalez does something or don't bother showing me him.
No, it was very weird. It yeah. was just like, and then, like, he popped out in the end. Like, and I was like, wait a minute. I don't, was he in the movie?
Like, when was he in the court? Yeah, he was with, like, he was with Granny in The Matrix.
Yes.
But that's it. That's all I really remember him in.
But that's the thing, too, is that this film also did a worse job than the first film did at, like, giving everyone equal screen time. Like, okay, yeah, all of these Looney Tunes were there, but we really only got to interact with Bugs and Daffy and some other ones, you know?
Oh, I don't know. I actually disagree. They actually had, like, a much more limited amount of Looney Tunes.
I don't think so.
And I think they all got to shine.
But you just complained about Speedy Gonzalez. How did they all shine?
Oh, Speedy Gonzalez. Speedy Gonzalez. But, like, I got to, like, Porky Pig's rap was cute.
Okay, he had a rap.
What you saw, Tweety and Sylvester had a couple of scenes together.
I mean, I felt like at least they all just kind of blended once into one another once they got on the basketball court. You know, the introductions and stuff were great and they were fun, but once it became in terms of actual plot, everyone just kind of disappeared into, you know, the background.
That could be true because there was a lot going on also in the background, like,
which is the opposite of the first film.
Right. All right, fine. I won't. Yeah.
That's the only thing. And at the end of the day, they're there because it's a Warner Brothers property, you know, and after they did their job, they could just, you know, be there in the background.
What do you think would appeal to the child now, though? LeBron James or the Looney Tunes? Like, who is the star here? Because
that's what I want to know, too. You know, I didn't think kids were watching Looney Tunes, and what platform is it available to them? I don't know. Maybe Boomerang, but, like, are they really watching it? And also,
yeah, it's called HBO Max. It's like,
so
there's
the 40s and 50s cartoons are available on HBO Max.
There are collections of them.
And you think children are watching that?
Yeah, because they're also watching the Sesame Workshop.
Okay, yeah, the Sesame Street is another thing entirely. Do not compare Looney Tunes and
children
to Sesame Street.
But that's part of the HBO Max collection.
That's great, yeah, but just because it's there doesn't mean they're watching it. We know that kids are watching Sesame Street because Sesame Street is still not only like, is its fame ubiquitous, but like you can see its presence in children's lives. You can't see that relationship that current day children have with Looney Tunes. It's not as apparent.
I mean, I agree with you.
You have kids in your family, Nicole. Are they talking about like Tweety Bird? Are you seeing any of these things that you would see?
My,
like,
sister's not even
thinking
about
stuff?
Showing them Looney Tunes. Like,
I know
Sesame Street, huge. Disney stuff, huge in their lives. Looney Tunes has not even been, that's like for older kids, one, I think.
The cooler kids.
Maybe the cool, but I don't think.
I don't think so. No, I don't.
I don't think that kids are watching Looney Tunes. I see now Looney Tunes shirts popping up, and I see them for adults and for kids maybe, but I see more sort of adults wearing Looney Tunes because that's them wearing their 90s childhood proudly.
Oh yeah. My God, that just reminded me of the trend of like the 90s. Do you remember the denim jackets that were like oversized and like you have a spray painted Bugs Bunny looking all hood or like Tasmanian Devil?
Kind of, yeah.
I remember this trend and I wanted to be part of it, but my mom would never let me buy something so oversized.
Well, the only reason why I also think that this film is not for kids is because Game of Thrones references, one.
A Casablanca reference, like what child is going to know
and
Casablanca?
Rick and Morty? Now, I know
that's
that
right. Rick and Morty made an appearance.
Yeah, Rick and Morty made an appearance. So I feel like these are references for media suave people, right?
Yes.
Who like indulge in a wide variety of stuff. And for us, all right? It's made for millennials who grew up watching Space Jam. This is not for children.
I don't know. I would argue though.
You could bring your child to see it, but it wasn't the target audience.
I feel
audience.
Like too that there is this like a group of kids. That they know that if their parents knew that they were watching this, you know, but of course they can watch it anywhere.
Well,
their phones, their tablets, on their computer, you know, they can watch these kind of shows.
Hey, guy, I will say this, Eddie. We were just hanging out with a couple who said that they watched this with their kid. And I actually was a little surprised by that because I happen to know this couple monitors very much what they watch with kids, right? And I remember thinking, just like, oh, interesting. I didn't think that this would be a movie that you would want to watch with your kids.
How old are they?
And Five. Right. Your face right now, if you guys can't see it, but I saw it. It was more like, oh, interesting. Surprise. I too was surprised because I didn't necessarily, I hadn't even seen the movie yet. And I was just thinking, like, interesting that you would take them to see a Looney Tunes movie. But, you know, it's a Looney Tunes and stuff. They found no problems with it, though. And I would agree with them, right? Where it's just like the movie itself is... I think this is one of those situations where, like, yes, this movie is made for kids or families with kids, but like, you remember how we, I think it was like last week what we said, it's just like, but sometimes there's jokes in there for adults, so adults can enjoy it too.
Yeah.
The references, all those references are for the adults. Like, the kids only have to understand it visually to enjoy, like, seeing Granny in the Matrix, they may not know the Matrix, but seeing that sequence of Granny and Speedy Gonzalez running around in the Matrix visually is funny to them. You know what I mean? Having two men in a spaceship come in and like get rid of, who was it, Tasmanian Devil? Right? Like, yeah. They were just like, we have no idea what's wrong with him. Like that, the kids don't have to know who that is to understand. It's just like, oh, there must be something really wrong with that guy. You know what I mean?
That's so true, yeah. Well, also, think about the way that they, like Marvin the Martian, right? The way that they set him up was like people who know who's in that ship, know who's coming, and are waiting to hear his voice, right? I just feel like this is, I think it's perfectly fine for children to watch. And I think that Looney Tunes should only be watched by kids who are maybe like 6 and older. I feel like any younger is just not a good idea. Like we spoke about before too, there's just things that, you know, for anyone younger should not be taking in on that level. Like, oh yeah, violence is funny, violence is cool, violence is easy. Personally,
violence is cool.
Like, yeah, so I would never show my child until they're 7 years old Looney Tunes.
Wow, you're really sounding like a prude and like a straight up Warner Brothers hater, because I know that you're like a Disney I know you're like a Disney
so because
file.
I won't show my kids Looney Tunes until
no,
they're 7.
I think you're just
I'm
showing your side, your one-sidedness to Disney. All right, because if it's a Disney property, you're all like Disney, Pixar, yay. But not Warner Brothers? I'm just being combative, Nicole. I don't mean these things.
Are you talking about last week with Pixar?
Yeah, I'm talking,
oh my God. He's still talking about it.
He's really talking about it. But Pixar is different than Disney.
I think me and Eddie were having lunch one day, and I was just like, can you still believe that Nicole thinks that Shrek is not as good as Monsters Incorporated?
Wow, you never let things go. I love it.
I'll wake up in the middle of the night and like shake Eddie awake. I'm like, can you believe Nicole said that?
That's great. We have this on an episode as proof that this is true. So I will remember this.
But I do gotta say though that some of the images, because I watched Looney Tunes as a little kid, like being little, probably 5, 6. But I do remember like the things that they do on the show that, you know, like only an adult probably can get. But I remember like experiencing. So I remember though that whole scene of I'm the barber of Seville. You know, when he does that, the whole thing, barber of Seville, you later find out where is that from?
You know? Yeah.
So there's that. And then there's the other one, the Vikings.
Yeah.
There's the Viking that he played.
Killed the rabbit.
And that whole dramatic scene when the rabbit is dead and Elmer Fudge is like, he's like holding Bugs Bunny's body and it's like, he's crying, like, what have I done? Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, as a kid, I'm just like, oh my God, this is so fascinating. It's like, and it's also Bugs Bunny and Drag too. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, this is so fascinating. This is so funny. And then knowing where that comes from. Now as an adult, and it's thinking and looking back and think, oh, how very clever.
Oh yeah, no, the original Looney Tunes was so
very clever.
Yeah. I wish
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I wish that, you know, Chuck Jones and Mel Blanc could have been involved with these films, because maybe the Looney Tunes portions of them would have been a little bit more clever. I feel like both films were trying to catch up to, you know, how actually brilliant Chuck Jones was. If you look at the early cartoons, they're actually pretty brilliant.
I mean, they do. I haven't seen them in a while, but like just from even Eddie describing those scenes, like I know exactly those episodes he's talking about, right? Like they are still very much
they're iconic, I think.
Yeah. But I was gonna say though, so to Eddie's point though, about how even back then one Looney Tunes was referencing stuff that like only adults would know. It's just like, I would argue then, all right, fine. They're being lazier about it, right? They're just using the Warner Brothers catalog of like pop culture, but you know. That's it. There's your solution, right? Like they're just using gags, visual gags that adults will understand. Maybe the kids won't know it now, but maybe when they revisit it, they'll be like, oh, I remember that. Or when they end up watching inevitably.
Wait. But I don't think it's being lazy, though.
I
think the cartoons now are totally lazy. It's totally like too sweet. It's too watered down. Oh, it's wait, no. too
I wasn't saying the old ones were lazy. I'm saying the new one.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. Okay, fine. We're in agreement on that. Right, yeah.
Fine. You know
how I heard you getting ready. I'm just like, oh, no. We're on the same page on that.
All right. I was ready to fight.
I agree with you.
I had several points. The original ones were just great. I was going to push some show notes and everything.
I think we all pretty much do agree, you know. We just maybe defer on small points too, because I mean, I love the Looney Tunes. I think it's great. I think it's just meant for people who are more familiar with it, especially when they first go into the Toon World and it's rabbit season. And he's like, nope, duck season. They have to do that. Then they go into the whole Barber of Seville things. Like, he follows them into these iconic Looney Tunes moments that only a fan would know. They, like you say, they're kind of like deep cuts and whatnot. So I would be surprised if children, they could enjoy it. Sure. I just would be surprised if those like visual references, they would understand yet. And they will if they watch it enough and then they get. They're like, hey, maybe I'm going to go back and watch some of the new tunes. So,
I mean, isn't that the whole goal of this movie? It's just like, all right, let's see.
The goal is for people to just watch Warner Brothers.
Well, watch it. I do remember maybe a decade ago where the Looney Tunes, the last Looney Tunes cartoons that I remember were maybe more than a decade ago, but they were like in space and they were like a space force or something. It was like Star Trek and it was like the Looney Tunes. It was a little more like edgier and darker, less funny, I think. That's the last of the Looney Tunes that I remember. I don't remember even what it's called.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm just upset that, you know, through all the Warner Brothers worlds that they traveled through, they didn't travel through one Bette Davis movie. Okay, she was the queen of Warner Brothers from the 30s
and 40s.
Bette Davis
from Baby Jane?
Yeah.
Oh, she was in. I remember seeing her in the audience. Yes, they had her, what's it called? Like the crazy old lady costume.
Oh, okay, that makes me happy. I kid you not. They should have given her a line, though.
No, they were only just references. They were because no one looked like what they were supposed to be portraying.
Yeah, of course. You know? Yeah, they were just Halloween costumes.
They were literally what it was. They were
oh my god, guys!
Cosplaying.
Can you guys be the two main characters of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane as your Halloween costumes?
Oh,
those would be really great Halloween costumes. That would be sweet.
Do you want to be on a wheelchair all night?
No. Oh, because you would obviously be Baby Jane.
I would.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to tap in that loquesa.
Oh my god, that would be the greatest Halloween costume.
But my husband channels that on
regularly. Thank you. There is one more point I want to make about the original Space Jam that I think it's worth noting, and this is the proper time as we're wrapping up. Do you remember the scene where the NBA players refused to change in the locker room because they thought that the reason they lost their basketball skills was because of a virus or a bacteria, and like how accommodating the NBA was to this, and realizing, wow, what a work of fiction, because in 2020 that's not at all what happened. Like you said, the NBA was just like, you fucking play basketball or y'all losing your jobs.
Yeah.
I thought that didn't age well, that scene, you know?
That's interesting. I remember watching the sequence where they're all clearly depressed. They're all like losing their like almost identities, you know, and it's put in this montage that, you know, takes things like this is going a little deep, but like mental health and makes it, you know, a joke and whatnot. That was just the thought that I had when I was watching it. I was like, oh, wow, they're making light of an identity crisis and depression and trauma. But again, that's just me looking for it. But did you feel Space Jam A New Legacy was needed, Rolando?
Shockingly, by the time I finished the movie, I really was coming into this saying probably not, but I came out saying, like, you know what? Yeah, it kind of was. I didn't know I needed it. Mm-hmm. And here it was.
That's cute. I did not need this movie.
No?
I don't think anybody needed it. Personally, I just don't feel like I got too much out of it. I thought I upset Eddie so much. He walked away. He put his thing down and he walked away. He walked away from this show forever.
He's furious.
He is furious. No, but I felt like it was just, you know, Warner Brothers brainwashing mechanism, which is fine and cool and somewhat enjoyable. But other than that, you know, I'm going to forget about it in like 2 weeks. So
I might forget about it in 2 weeks. I don't know. I actually think this movie might be one of my favorite ones so far this year that we've seen.
Look at that.
It's like, as shockingly Cruella and Space Jam. I'm just like, wow, I'm just like reliving
the ones we didn't think we would. Yeah.
The ones, my 96 fantasy, basically. I'm just thinking this would be my childhood, you know?
That's what this year has really been. I mean, we did Rugrats, we did iCarly. This is like 90s kids year.
But it's interesting, right? No, because I actually did not think I was going to enjoy this movie, right? But I actually came out like, I was just like, huh, this was, I liked it. I thought this was good. I thought this was entertaining. And I thought this was cute. And I like, I honestly, I will say this. I think they try to deliver some emotional depth to the story that I just wasn't expecting for a Space Jam movie. And I was, by the time it ended, I was just like, this is, I'm glad I saw this movie.
Aww.
Which I, again, I also came in here like thinking it's just like, I'm going to hate this. Yeah. So yeah. You know, mm-hmm. But I don't know. Have you guys seen Space Jam? If we're going by the box office numbers, it sounds like maybe, because it is killing in the box office. Did you go see it in theaters or did you stream it on HBO Max? Let us know. You guys can hit us up on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is Remakes Reboots Revivals. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/remakesrebootsrevivals. You're hearing that probably. That's my dog. He's making a guest appearance. You can also email us. Our email address is remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. We love hearing from you guys, so please email us with any questions or comments. And guys, please do not forget to rate and review us on Apple iTunes. It really helps other listeners find us.
Absolutely. And if you want to share any of your thoughts on this episode or any other episode, you can always call and leave us a voicemail. 862-248-2326. Again, 862-248-2326. Call that number and leave us a voicemail and we might just play it on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note, stay original.